Thought Bubble Audio.
Look, up in the sky!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Welcome to Beer with Geeks with Tim and Frank.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
I am Iron Man.
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
You're a wizard, Harry.
A couple of guys with a couple of beers and a whole lot of pop culture nostalgia.
Make it so, number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
Name the dog Indiana.
Life finds a way.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Now sit back and crack open a cold one. Because it's time for Beer with Geeks.
It comes in pints?
Shaken, not stirred.
Great Scott!
I was way off. I knew it started with an S, though.
Hi, and welcome to Beer with Geeks, where two geeks geek out with beer. I'm Frank. And as you can probably tell, I've got a little bit of a cold. Sorry about that. But I'll be stepping out of the way in just a minute. This is a special episode. We're bringing you a special presentation of a conversation between Tim and friend of the show, Palmer, who many of you have heard before on this show, as well as on Supergirl TV Talk. He fills in a lot, as well as on Academy Rewind, which he and Tim host together. They recently did an episode about 1978's Oscars, where Star Wars was nominated. And after that, they did a special Patreon exclusive episode where they talked all about the cinematic legacy of Star Wars and their own personal relationships with the franchise. We thought it was so good. You know, originally it went out to just our Patreon subscribers. We thought it was so good and it went over so well. We wanted to bring it to you here as an encore presentation. So even those of you who are not Patreon subscribers will get to hear it. And hopefully you'll hear it and think, hey, I want to sign up and hear, some of the exclusive things that they've got there for Patreon. So, enjoy this episode, of the special presentation of this Academy Rewind Patreon exclusive with Tim and Palmer. They may not be drinking beer this time, but I hope you'll give them a pass. Anyway, we'll be back next week with our regularly scheduled shows. As always, you can find us at BeerWithGeeks.com. You can find us at BeerWithGeeks on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook, Beer with Geeks, iTunes. Leave us reviews and ratings. We really appreciate those. Very, very grateful to all of you for everything you do. And of course, check us out at patreon.com/thoughtbubbleaudio if you do want to become a Patreon member get all kinds of exclusive content like episodes of Beer with Geeks in advance, episodes of Academy Rewind in advance, and special presentations of episodes like the one you're about to hear. Thanks a lot and enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to Academy Rewind Patreon episode, where we are taking a in-depth look at one of the films from one of the years that we are covering. This year is 1978, and we are talking about...
The Turning Point.
The Turning Point. Wow, what? I love movies about ballet, don't you? No, just kidding. We're talking about Star Wars. Just like I love Star Wars, Palmer hates Star Wars, and as James Earl Jones said in A Big Bang Theory, I like Star Wars too.
I like Star Wars too.
It's a great episode.
I love that episode.
It's a great. Let me guess.
You like Star Wars?
Well, guess what? I like Star Wars too.
He looks so happy when he says it too.
So let's go to Tijuana. It's a great episode.
I really, you know, as much as I really like that scene, I really wish he would have been like, let me guess. You like driving Miss Daisy. Well, I wasn't in the movie. I was in the stage play.
Oh, my God. Was it Angela Lansbury he was in that with? I think it was Angela.
The stage play?
Yeah.
I believe so.
I think it was Angela Lansbury.
Yeah.
I would love just different scenes of him choosing different movies. Let me guess. You like The Sandlot. Well, you know, I was also in another baseball movie.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Angels in the Outfield or Rookie of the Year.
Before I forget,
yes,
they filmed a show of Driving Miss Daisy, so you need to find it and so we can watch it.
Okay, okay.
It was one of those Fathom event things.
Oh, I was just thinking about today thinking about the Frankenstein Fathom event.
Oh, that was so good
because it was so good with Johnny Lee Miller and Benedict Cumberbatch. It was so good.
I was actually talking about Mother with somebody the other day, the movie Mother.
Yeah.
And I talked about how I thought it balanced between really good tension and just on the edge of being boring at times.
Sure.
And that reminds me of like that Frankenstein. Like it's it can be very boring if it wasn't done so well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I agree. Kind of like Star Wars.
Kind of like Star Wars, and we're back.
Nailed it. I don't agree with that statement that I just made either, but, well, I guess anything can stink if it's done boring, but, so anyway, so you're drinking Earl Grey tea out of my Star Trek mug.
Yes.
In preparation. Actually drinking green tea.
Tea, but Earl Grey hot.
Yeah. Literally out of my Star Trek mug,
yep,
in preparation for this talk that we like to call Talking About Star Wars.
Yes.
Yeah. I had no title.
And that's because Star Trek is better.
No, conditioner is better. I make the hair silky and smooth. No, Star Trek is better. I answer philosophical questions about humanity and beyond. No, Star Wars is better.
Oh, all right.
Because I do the hero's journey over and over again.
I do the same thing over and
Star
over
Wars
again.
Is cyclical, just like Ring Theory. Okay. This could be great. I don't know. It's Patreon. We don't have to be like, on point.
Yep.
To turning point.
We can, you know, loosen our ties.
Look.
Let our hair down.
Look, you know that I had the day off today from work, or I still would be wearing
and
my tie.
You're still wearing a tie.
Yeah. I'm not. I'm wearing an undershirt. It just occurred to me that I'm not actually wearing a real shirt when you came over. I apologize for how sloppy I must look.
It'll be reflected on your Yelp review.
Oh, yes. Woohoo, I made it. I have a Yelp. I'm internet famous. I'm on Yelp. All right. So, if you checked out the original Academy Rewind episode, we talked about Star Wars and its significant impact on the 70s and what that means for years beyond. Palmer, why don't you give us some background on why you hate Star Wars?
Disney.
Yep. Tell me more. I think it's important for people to know where you stand before we talk about this.
So I've always been more of a Star Trek person than Star Wars.
Fair. I don't think people can get mad at you for that. I think that they are of two different they are two different ilks, and it's important. It's an important distinction.
I'm old enough that I was.
You are old.
Yeah. I was old enough that growing up, I saw Star Wars on video at home.
Right.
It was past the time of them being in the theater.
Sure. Did you see the re-releases in the 90s?
I saw one.
I did too.
I saw one in the theater.
I saw New Hope in theater. I didn't see the other ones.
I think that was one I did too. So I saw the re-release in the theater, but so it was between the time of like being a young child going to the theater and that being like my first movie theater experience. Mm-hmm. So I also don't have any grudges against the prequels.
Right.
I like them.
Yeah. I think most people actually do. It's just not popular to say it.
I think people actually do like the prequels. But because of the internet, it just looks like the overwhelming opinion is that they're horrible.
Right, agreed. And that goes for anything. I said this on a Beer with Geeks episode a while back. I said, look, you could say you don't like the prequels all you want. I think it's called What the Bleep 2... R2 Bleep 2 Star Wars or What the F Star Wars. I think that's the name of the episode. But I said, like, you can say you don't like the prequels all you want, but you're lying to yourselves. You might not like parts of them.
Right.
You might not like Anakin's talk about sand, or you might not like Jar Jar.
Yeah, those were the best parts.
Or anything. You might not like any of those. But, like, why wouldn't you like Qui-Gon Jinn?
Right.
Like, it's a great character. And that's before people were crazy about Liam Neeson. Like, people liked Liam Neeson and whatever else, but
that was before his family started getting taken every year.
Right, exactly. It was before his Neeson-sance.
Yeah.
And so I just don't understand. Or why wouldn't you like Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi or something like that?
So, all right.
Or Mace Windu.
And I hate Force Awakens, and I've always been very upfront about that.
You didn't like it walking right out of the theater.
So here's my theory, and I'm gonna see if you're willing to at least put credence in this.
Okay,
if you'll actually,
I'll put a little own up because you used the word credence.
Yeah, I'll see if you actually own up to this.
Okay,
So you saw the prequels in the theaters?
Yes.
You saw all three in the theaters?
Yes.
Okay. I did too.
Okay.
I skipped school to go see Phantom Menace the day it came out.
Okay. I collected the Pepsi cans.
Oh, I still have them.
Oh, do you? Can you like, I need to see those. Mom made me throw them out.
I will have to go back and look for them. So when I saw Phantom Menace in the theater, it was packed.
Yeah, of course.
The Star Wars crawl comes on, people lost their minds and was cheering.
Yeah.
The end of the movie, everyone cheered.
Yeah.
No one booed. Everyone cheered.
Sure.
I
saw Phantom Menace like 10 times in theaters.
I saw each of the prequels twice.
Okay. Well, I had a friend when I was a kid who, whose aunt ran the theater. So we would just go for free.
Yeah. That's how
I saw a lot of films that way.
That is how I saw V for Vendetta like 15 times in the theater.
That's how I saw Driven with Sylvester Stallone. Do you remember that movie?
Oh,
the Formula Racing movie? Yeah.
So the same thing happened with Attack of the Clones. Sold out. People cheered.
Mm-hmm.
What was the third one?
Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith. Sold out. Everyone cheered.
Yeah.
It wasn't until the internet blew up.
Yep.
And became this cult, this phenomenon that it's become. This online place where you could go hide behind a keyboard anonymously.
Yep.
And just bitch about anything.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure people were, because, I mean, the internet was certainly around in the 90s before.
Yeah, but it wasn't as prevalent.
But I was going to say, you had to
log on to AOL.
Oh, God forbid you have to log on. But no, what I was going to say is like, you were still isolated inside a chat room. So even if we all had the internet, it was much harder to get your opinion generally out to the public. And so the internet blanket statement was much harder to find. Mm-hmm. It didn't really exist.
So now fast forward years and the prequels have now been like, oh, the prequels suck. You know,
I know where you're going with
Hayden Christensen is so wooden as far as acting goes.
Sure.
And Force Awakens comes out. Force Awakens sells out.
People lose their minds.
People lost their mind. They cheered. Everyone cheered except for me in the theater that we went to at the end of the movie.
I remember.
Walked out, I told you my very specific reasons for disliking it.
Yep. It was cyclical.
It was
it.
A new hope.
Because I had said the same thing to you. Because I liked it. I wasn't over the moon for it. Mm-hmm. But I agreed with some of your points.
And it seems like as we kind of crawl along, more of that is starting to come out. Like there seems to be more people willing to say, well, it was just A New Hope done worse. And I'm not saying that's the majority opinion right now.
Yep.
And the seeds are starting to be there on the internet.
Okay. I agree. Okay. So I will concede to that point.
Yeah.
Okay. But I also want to, I will say this. So it goes both ways. You said like you like the prequels. Mm-hmm. And when you saw them in theaters, people lost their minds and they clapped and whatever. Yep. I agree. I saw it happen. I watched it happen. Don't tell me it didn't happen. I think that it's easy, but I think it's also easy for a small opinion on the internet to either look like it's everybody's opinion or change people's opinion. And it's actually hard to tell the difference.
I agree.
And so even when Force Awakens came out, I remember a lot of people saying, it's just A New Hope. I'm okay with that to an point, but it's just, the story was just A New Hope. And again, like for me, before you go back. Force Awakens. I think because the way this way we're recording this, I think Last Jedi is going to be out by the time that this even gets released.
4 months.
It'll be out for 4 months.
No. We're banked about 4 months worth of. This is going to be one of the last episodes that we do before we shut down for the beginning of Supergirl. We're about 4 months in the bank. So February. So yeah,
Last Jedi is already out. So this is
this episode could get released at any point.
It's true. I mean, it would be weird when that one's released in February, and like you can go check out Patreon. It's already been there for months. But right. The cyclical nature of Star Wars is important to the mythos of Star Wars because you see that even played out. You see that played out, that cyclical nature played out in the prequels. Like
right.
You see it happen. You see in the original trilogy, you see Luke's journey, and then the prequels, you see it reflected.
You see
Anakin.
Anakin's rise and fall.
Right. Right. But you see that reflection in Luke to some extent.
Right.
In the, it's not exactly the same, but you see that reflection.
And I agree with you, but I think the only issue is that had to be the prequels.
Okay, well, because
you already kind of wrote that story.
Okay, that's yes and no. I know what you're saying, but I thought you were going in a different argument. I thought you were going to say like yes, that's true, but those are character arcs, and it's not the plot of the film,
right? But I mean,
Phantom Menace, clones, and Sith do not reflect the plot of A New Hope in any way.
You could argue that Phantom Menace and A New Hope kind of mirror each other to a point.
Because this thing in space
comes out of nowhere. He becomes, you know, he's a really good pilot.
Oh, sure. He blows up the thing in space.
Right.
Yeah.
He blows up the Death Star, which I think actually the prequels don't even come near the Death Star, which I'm really happy about.
No, they don't. So what I was going to say, though, what episode 7 had to do is take two groups of Star Wars fans and unite them together, because there are it had to take the people who were going to go see Star Wars no matter what. Myself. It was,
well, I mean, I was there with you.
Like, yeah, absolutely. We were in that group together. Yeah. So let me continue. It had to take that group. It had to take a completely new group of people who had never seen Star Wars before and introduce them to Star Wars, because those people do exist. And some people, like, I'm talking like little kids. I'm not talking adults, yeah, but no, this might be their first Star Wars film.
Okay.
Because not every, you know, it might be the only one playing, and maybe mom and dad didn't have time to introduce them to Star Wars, you know, whatever the case may be. And then it also had to take the people who fell away from Star Wars because of the prequels, because we know those people exist, that they really didn't like it because it wasn't Star Wars to them, and so they fell away from Star Wars. And say what you will, whether there's a lot of them or not a lot of them, or you should listen to them or not, but it had to bring them back. That was its job. Yes. And by giving them a movie they'd already seen, that's something, and something they know they love.
Right.
It's like an automatic win for those people. But it alienated the people who, not everybody, but I think it alienated some of us who would go see a Star Wars movie anyway.
Right.
And it didn't push
anything forward.
Not really. I think it did some things, like it introduced new characters, and people were like moved around the board in a different way.
Yeah.
But it didn't. Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith introduced new elements to Star Wars that we had not previously seen.
Yeah.
Something new and exciting and world building. Force Awakens asked a lot of questions and didn't answer any of them, which is where the empty feeling comes from, the people who kind of rebelled against that film.
Right. I'm not willing to put much stock that there were a lot of people that kind of fell away from Star Wars because of the prequels.
There definitely are.
I think there are people who will say that.
Okay. Well, I'm not saying like they stop watching all Star Wars or whatever. They're just their fandom diminished.
Yeah. And it was funny because
like the Jedi at the end of Sith.
So a couple of the other things that I had been thinking about while you were talking was one, you made the comment of the internet kind of making like a minority opinion seem like the popular opinion. Mm-hmm.
Now Zoidberg is the popular one.
Or that it tried like on how it kind of like swayed how it tries to tend to sway not necessarily weak-minded people, but people that just go back and forth on whims because of what the internet says, and we both know someone like that.
You don't need to have your own opinion on this matter.
Yeah.
We don't need to have our own opinion on this matter.
Yeah.
It's true. The internet can be like the force sometimes.
Right. And we know people who fall for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That being said, I thought about this afterwards. Like we said, I'm more of a Star Trek fan than Star Wars fan.
Sure.
And you know what has to be said in this conversation is I do dislike Force Awakens, and it really ruined me for Star Wars movies.
Right.
J.J. Abrams also reset the Star Trek universe.
But it didn't ruin Star Trek for you.
It didn't ruin Star Trek for me, but it was the... You know what it was? It was the same problem. Is I saw him do this to Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just did it to Star Wars.
What's the this you are referring to?
He just takes better versions of the ideas in the movie for the franchise that he's supposed to be shepherding and does them over again, not adding anything new to it.
Oh, yeah, because 2009 Star Trek is A New Hope. It's the same story.
Right.
Yeah. There's a big thing in space. Planet gets destroyed. The MacGuffin,
you know,
farm kid comes off, saves the thing. It's A New Hope.
And then he has Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
That he does over again and just does it
sort
worse.
Of. Yeah. I don't.
And
honestly, I think if he actually went, if he did like Force Awakens, like Wrath of Khan,
yeah,
I think Into Darkness would have been a better film, actually.
Yeah.
I think like he took bits and like put them in a blender.
Yeah.
And it didn't play as well as something like Force Awakens.
But again, like when those movies came out, people really loved them. But as time has gone on, Star Trek fans are now starting to go, well, he kind of screwed the pooch on those.
I have not heard anybody speak ill of 2009
actually,
Star Trek. I've heard people speak ill of Into Darkness.
I've heard it more and more. I'm not saying it's the prevailing opinion yet, but it's starting.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's partly internet culture in a way that, like, you express what everybody's expressing,
and
you know, so you don't get yelled at,
down.
And then you wait for everybody to calm down, and then you express your real opinion.
Yep.
There's a guiding system to it. But let's go back and talk about
A New Hope.
A New Hope, because that's why we're here.
Right.
I said on our main episode that Star Wars A New Hope deserves Best Picture because of the cultural... Bless you.
Thank you.
Because of the cultural impact of the film. But not just the cultural impact of the film. It's a well-made movie.
Mm-hmm.
The story is tight and coherent. The characters are real characters, even if the dialogue is clunky in some places. The characters are actual characters. The production design and value is totally fresh and new and has influenced things for mm-hmm. years to come. Like, those things really can't be... A lot of that cannot be refuted.
Yeah, there's a lot of special effects
that they created for Star Wars. Like, it's
right.
They did that shot really well. I've
like
seen it before.
Industrial Lights and Magic, who's one of the big special effects.
Light and Magic, it's one light. They only have one light bulb. Yeah.
So Industrial Light and Magic, which is one of the big effects houses in Hollywood, was made for this.
Was made for Star Wars.
Lucas,
right.
Lucas had this idea.
Lucasfilm was made for Star Wars.
Well, yeah. But I mean, so Lucas had this idea for a movie and was like, all right, we need these special effects. And he went to people in the field and they were like, no, this isn't something that's...
It can't be done.
Yeah, this is not something that exists. So he went out and made a company and was like, go do this.
Get to work. And that story in of itself is fascinating. A movie about the making of Star Wars would make a fascinating film.
Yeah.
Like the behind the scenes of making Star Wars, like, or even like the behind the scenes of the early days of Lucasfilm, because it was crazy all over the place. I highly recommend the George Lucas biography. If anybody, it's by the guy, I can't remember the author, but he also did a Jim Henson biography.
Okay.
And it is fascinating, like absolutely fascinating. The creation of like Lucas's early days in film school and what influences what pieces there and the kind of person that he is now and was, his relationship with Coppola and like all of the stuff. It's really, really, really interesting. Like, we almost got a George Lucas directed Apocalypse Now. Like, how crazy that was. I know. Mm. You gotta read the book. It's so good. It's easy to kind of like watch Star Wars and be like, oh yeah, what a great hallway you've created, or what a great shot of this thing. Like, but to a moviegoer in 77, that it's totally mind boggling.
Yeah.
It's why, say, like Avatar is the number one movie in the world, because those effects, regardless of what you think about the story acting or whatever, the effects at the time were mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely mind-boggling. I think the story of Avatar is fine. It's been told before. Not unlike the story of Star Wars, which has been told before. It's the hero's journey. It's a little... It's like the hero's journey to a degree. It's a little, like... It's to the side of the hero's journey to a point. So, like, because you're not introduced to your main hero in Star Wars for the till the first 20 minutes of the film.
Right.
You open the film... And it's R2-D2 and C-3PO, and you're like, okay, so are these the hero of the film? No. And then you're introduced to Princess Leia. Is she the heroine of the film? No. Because then she goes away for a big chunk of the movie. Yeah. And then you follow the droids again, and you're like, okay, I guess these are the heroes. Then you're introduced to Luke Skywalker, and it's about 20 minutes in. And so, like, that's dead risky. That's not, like... If you're writing, if you're in a school and they're in your creative writing class, no one's going to tell you to do that. You introduce your audience to your main character right away.
Right.
Or unless you're using a framing device in some particular way, your main character should not come into play 20 minutes into the movie. But somehow George Lucas makes it work. So it is. And then, like, if you're looking at just A New Hope, it is a complete hero's journey. But then if you branch it out and do Empire and Jedi, it's another complete hero's journey. It's like that cyclical, it's like the, you know, the cyclical nature of Star Wars or whatever. It's the hero's journey with inside another hero's journey. It's crazy. There was a podcast network called Story Wonk, and the podcast isn't there anymore. It was called Story Wonk Star Wars. I can't remember his name. Starts with an S, but
Sam.
No, it's like Sylvester or Sebastian or something. Salazar, whatever. Salvatore. He talks about where the tension in Star Wars comes from, and it's not, is Luke going to blow up the Death Star or not? Like, it's not. It's because he basically tells you he can do it earlier in the film when they're all gathered around.
When he was acting like a psychopath shooting womp rats?
Kind of, actually. Yeah. When he says, like, everyone freaks out about 2 meters, the hole being 2 meters wide, and that's impossible.
That's what she said.
Right. Yeah, 2 meters, jeez. Like, when they say, and he said, you know, and he's like, I used to shoot womp rats on my T-16 back home. They're not much bigger than 2 meters. He tells you in that moment that he's going to blow up the Death Star, because he so nonchalantly just said, I can do this. And so the tension of Star Wars is not whether Luke is going to blow up the Death Star. Mm-hmm. It's whether he's going to trust in the Force or not, because that's Luke's actual journey.
You know,
whether he and the Force can work in sync with one another.
I was actually just thinking in my head as you were talking about that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, He doesn't need the Force to blow up the Death Star. He just did it with Womp Rats, and those things were moving.
Yeah.
He didn't use the Force then.
Luke, like Anakin's pod racing, he doesn't know he's using the Force, but he's using the Force. It's the same. It's the same thing.
Possibly.
No, definitely. I think that's how the Force works.
That was before we realized, like, the Force was just tiny midichlorians in your blood.
That robot chicken, like Luke Skywalker, like, I am your father. No. And Princess Leia is your sister. That's impossible. Like, and
that's highly unlikely.
And midichlorians are actually just tiny bacteria, and the Force is just tiny bacteria in your bloodstream. All right, if you're not gonna take this seriously, I'm gonna go home. The story
of... What the hell is a Padme?
Yeah. What the hell is a Padamame? What the hell is an aluminum falcon? what is a falcon in the Star Wars universe?
A giant metal ship.
Okay, great.
It's funny going back and watching A New Hope now being divorced from
the rest of the saga,
the fanaticism of Star Wars.
Okay.
Because the special effects are good.
Mm-hmm.
The story is good.
Mm-hmm.
The acting is okay.
It's definitely a B movie. For sure. There are people in
it
who are
the way it's shot.
Well,
like that's what he was aiming for. Like,
he wanted
his...
to make a serial.
Right.
And George Lucas has never claimed to be a people person by any stretch of the imagination. He is not an actor's director.
Right.
He's a visual director, mm-hmm. and he really has to, like, give his actors, like, almost no advice. Like,
right.
George's one piece of advice in the whole making of A New Hope is faster, more intense.
Yeah.
That's the one piece of acting, like, anything he gave them, which works because they're all... They all fit in the same mold. But...
So here's what I'm getting at, mm-hmm. being divorced from the fanaticism, is so there are parts, like, especially towards the end. So towards the end, when they're having the assault on the Death Star.
Yeah.
The acting isn't over the top.
Nope.
It's not it's not hammy. It's not very bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it is bad for not the fact that it's over the top.
Mm-hmm.
But it's somehow understated. Like, all these, the way a lot of these people are talking and interacting with each other is very level toned, like nothing's going on.
Okay. I understand, but these are military people. And so if they were...
No, I'm also talking about Luke. Like, Luke at times is just even keeled to the point where it's like, there's no, like...
Well, because he tells you he can blow up the Death Star. He tells you that. He doesn't have reason
to
be super
nervous. You got stuff going on around like that. Like, even military people, they're going to keep the composure, but they're going to start shouting and barking orders. And that stuff just never happens.
Okay. I understand. I definitely understand what you mean. But I think because everybody's in the same boat, like, not one person's, like, overacting. Well, not one person's, like, wigging out in their X-Wing while everybody else isn't. I think it all works cohesively. But what I'm going to say to you is that you, very well documented at this point, do not like it when things are super realistic.
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's well documented. It's well documented. It's well documented.
No,
we can go back and listen to every episode now.
Alex
Let's
Ross
sit here.
Art. That's super realistic.
I'm not talking about art. I'm talking about dialogue and acting in films. And the more realistic it gets,
if I remember correctly, I really liked An Unmarried Woman.
The more realistic it gets, the no one liked Unmarried Woman.
I did. I picked it that year.
The more realistic the film gets, the dialogue centric, you shy away from it. You just don't like it as much. There is a podcast episode trailer, you talking about how you don't like realistic dialogue.
There is?
Yeah. We have evidence of you saying it. So
really?
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna need to see charts.
So what you're saying is that, like, in that moment you're saying, like, it's not realistic enough and you don't like it, which is very contradictory to how I've always known you.
I'm an enigma.
Yeah, that's like so I just don't want you to be contrary, for like, you know what I mean? Like
no, and I know what you're saying. Don't be contrarian for the sake of being contrarian.
Right, because if you don't like something, you don't like something.
Right.
There's no foul in that.
Like I said, going back and watching it, this is the first time I noticed it.
Mm, interesting.
And I'm like, wow, that seems a little weird.
Yeah, so like, that's what I was wondering. So like, is it, like, did you watch it because you haven't seen A New Hope? You haven't watched A New Hope since you saw Force Awakens, right?
Correct.
Okay, so this is the first time you've watched A New Hope with this lens of, this isn't for me anymore.
This is the first time I watched any Star Wars thing since Force Awakens.
Okay, so but you've watched it with the lens of,
right,
this isn't for me anymore. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, your brain is like auto-tuning to what it could consider problems.
Right.
Even if they're like, are you seeing problems where there aren't any problems because there's just this a general dislike for it now?
Well, maybe this will answer the question, because, okay, you know what else my brain noticed?
Okay.
So you have these action sequences, and again, we're going to talk about the Death Star assault.
Okay.
Because we saw it when
When you say the Death Star, are you talking about the X-Wings, like the battle for Yavin 4, or are you talking
like the whole 14
Han, Luke,
minutes
and Leia inside of
the 14
the
minutes.
Okay. The dogfight.
Yeah. Okay. The end.
Space dogs.
So obviously that's, you know, it's one of the last 14 minutes of the movie. We saw it again when I came over before we recorded.
Okay.
So you have all this action going on. Like, you have shots from inside the X-Wing cockpit, and you see things zooming around. You see, like, you see the lasers going.
Mm-hmm.
You see the stars flying by. You see everything.
Stars at night. Deep in the heart of Texas.
So you see all these things zooming by, and it gives you this, like, intense feeling, like it's a dogfight.
Yep.
And it's like, all right, good, I'm in this. All right. And then it cuts to open space shots of, like, the exterior of the ships flying.
Mm-hmm.
And then the exterior of the ships flying go incredibly slower.
Oh, than how they're moving inside.
Right.
I don't disagree with you.
And I understand there's the whole like aspect of, like, you have stuff, you have a stationary thing to compare it to, and I realize, like, that's part of it.
Yeah, I mean, like, the shots of, like, the Death Star getting hit by, like, X-Wings is them on the back of a pickup truck driving by a model kit that they built, like, a part of the Death Star on, you know. That's just
It's just a limitation of the day.
Right, which is why George Lucas said, even when the film came out, this is not my complete vision for Star Wars, because the technology isn't there.
And
even though he created so, mm-hmm, well, not he, but his team created so much that people are, some of these techniques we're still using today,
yeah,
to make films.
People are still using tennis balls as...
Right, as markers.
Or, like, a sneaker.
We are kind of getting away from that for a bit. Like, you don't always need the tennis ball anymore.
Yeah.
You know, or you can use a person, you know, now or something like that. But,
or a giant stick.
Or a giant stick. A biggie green yardstick. But I do understand what you mean. The dogfight on the exterior of the X-Wings looks like they're moving slower than the inside.
It's also funny, like when I go back and watch it and I see, like, how much of some of those exterior shots,
mm-hmm,
are reused.
Oh yeah, there's a good bit. Well, Star Wars was over budget and behind schedule, so
much like everything.
like every movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it made it money. I think it's made its money back.
Actually, there's always been the joke that Star Wars is still
earning its
profitable.
Money back. Yeah. I don't think that's actually true. I really don't think that's actually true.
I honestly don't know. I would imagine not.
That happens for films all the time. Like, Bambi wasn't in Fantasia, and Pinocchio.
It could be
were not profitable for a super long time.
It could be something as trivial as like, well, this is how much the studio paid for the movie, mm-hmm. and if the studio like had to take out a loan, it's always been the biggest joke that I've heard in Hollywood that like
Star Wars
is still not profitable.
Yeah, I think it is a joke. It's hard to imagine that this
and
multi-billion-dollar franchise.
It could also
is
be just because of how much Lucas got for it. So it might not be profitable for the studio.
It's profitable for somebody though.
Yeah,
yeah. That's a good point.
But like Empire is and Jedi is, mm-hmm. So. What have you. So, I mean, I see the problems now.
Sure. I see them. I see the problems in any film that I watch, though. Star Wars is not immune to me looking at a film and seeing problems the way that someone delivers a line or Matt lines around a particular thing, mm-hmm. or this shot is really long. Like I thought when I was watching it for this, like the shot of Luke running away from the sand crawler after the quote, like the stormtroopers like shoot it up and him getting into his speeder and driving off is stupidly long.
Yeah.
Like some of the tension is gone because you kind of watch him like fumbling, getting into it and then starting it up. And it's just not super clean. And so like, I see that stuff, but
I think of the, I think of the scene in Ed Wood
mm-hmm.
where they're filming Plan 9 from Outer Space. And he accidentally like walks into like the edge of a tombstone. And mm-hmm. he was like, all right, cut, print, and they're like, don't you want to retake it? He's like, nah, it adds realism.
Well, that's like even in Star Wars when the stormtrooper hits his head on the door.
Yep.
That's one of my favorite bits in all of Star Wars, whatever. Stormtroopers are coming in line, looking scary, and there's dunk. Like, it's great. I was also giggling to myself watching that sandcrawler scene because, you know, the sand people, you know, some Tusken Raiders allegedly have, like, you know, killed all these Jawas. And he's like, Obi-Wan's like, only Imperial Stormtroopers are so precise. And I'm like, like lols. Yeah. No, they're not. I saw Tusken Raiders shoot pod racers from, like, like 150 yards away.
But I mean,
like, exact sniper shot.
But to be fair, like, we know Obi-Wan's full of crap.
That's
because
true.
Because there are no stormtroopers before he hightails it out of there and starts hiding away. It's
that's
the
true.
Clone
they're clone troopers. That is so true.
So according to him, like, he probably thinks clone troopers are now just called stormtroopers.
And which they were very precise.
Yeah.
And so that way he's just ill-informed. He's not full of it. He just doesn't know.
Yeah.
But Obi-Wan is famous for a certain point of view, so
I really want the special edition where there's a scene on the Death Star,
mm-hmm.
like after their encounter with the stormtroopers, and
yeah.
like, look, I was way off about their precision.
there's actually a book coming out, or it's already out. I'm not sure of the timeline based on this episode's release date. Called A Certain Point of View, and they've got a bunch of authors. Greg Rucka's was in it. Charles Soule did one.
Okay,
and who wrote Captain Marvel? Her original relaunch, McCormick, Catherine.
Kelly Sue DeConnick.
Kelly Sue DeConnick. Yeah, they not all comic writers. They got a bunch of other people too.
not all comic writers, even though those are the only ones.
Those are the names that stuck out to
right.
me. But they're just like, it's a book of short stories
mm-hmm.
from like a character or a moment that you never hear or see from ever again. So like mm-hmm. one of them is like the stormtrooper that like stunned Princess Leia, like in A New Hope, and then has to deliver
with
her
his fierceness.
Right, with his fierceness and his rifle. And then has to deliver her to Darth Vader. Yep. Or like one of the like patrons in Mos Eisley Cantina while Han and Chewie and Obi-Wan or whatever are having their conversation. Like they're over there like gambling.
Is this all Star Wars related?
It's all Star Wars related, yeah. And it's just called From a Certain Point of View. And it's just...
Might actually check that out.
Exactly, right. It's like, it's a really interesting concept because I like the idea of like... What were you thinking on the in between of this? I think there's a Tarkin one
where he's stroking his beard before he dies.
Even though he doesn't have a beard, he puts on a fake beard just to stroke it, and then takes it off when he knows the camera's going to be back.
Yeah.
You know, like thinking about like just about before he dies, like what he's thinking about right before. Like those are cool. I mean, I wouldn't care about all of the character like stories and say, but the one that struck my interest was the guy who stuns Princess Leia at the beginning of New Hope, like, because that guy's like having the best day of his life. Like, I did it, I'm not going to die.
He's actually one of the guys that gets promoted after he sees like
it's actually General Veers. He's like, son of a nutcracker. It's Captain Nita. But Captain Nita dies.
And, you know, so Lucas thought this wasn't complete.
That's right.
And went and did the special editions.
Sure.
Which I'm a fan of.
It depends on what it is. Some things are, like, so in A New Hope, like, right before the land speeder stops, the stormtroopers stop the land speeder to be like, these aren't the droids you're looking for. All that, like, like there's a creature that walks right in front of the camera and like obscures literally everything and just moves on.
That's fine.
And I get like why it's done, like because it makes Mos Eisley feel congested and full of life and all that. But it just feels so out of place. Like it's not good filmmaking to block your main
action. But it feels like that's what would happen.
I think it's fine for other bits that they do that in Mos Eisley. That one, because the matting isn't quite right. It doesn't. No, the texture's not quite right.
I will say the only scene that I dislike in all of the special editions is the Jabba Han Solo.
I do not like that scene.
And the only reason I dislike it is because it was originally filmed.
Yep.
It was originally filmed.
With a dude.
With an actor standing in place.
Yep. Well, Jabba was supposed to be that guy, and they decided to change what Jabba was going to be.
Yeah, because he wasn't... They didn't use him for the first movie. But the way the scene shot and Harrison Ford...
Oh, when he walks on the tail.
Walks around.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only reason I dislike that scene, is because they took this scene that was actually already filmed, and they were like, we're going to insert it back in... But then they got to that part, they're like, well, we can't go back and reshoot it.
Yep.
He obviously walks around. Everyone knows he has a tail, so we have to add that in.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you could have just made the argument that, like, if they don't add in that like, expression, you could just be like, he stepped over the tail.
Maybe, yeah. The way that, I don't think it's not good form on Han's part to step on Jabba's tail. I don't like that scene because it's redundant, because the conversation that Han has with Greedo in the cantina is exactly the conversation he has with Jabba in the next scene. I got this job. I have this money, blah, blah, blah. It's an unneeded scene.
Yeah, but Greedo's dead, so there's nobody to deliver that message to Jabba.
Right. Fair. Agreed. But... but then, so then Han has to go be like, I killed Greedo, which you won't know about because I'm not going to tell you. But the audience already knows that information.
Right.
And so like, it's not about what's happening in the story. It's about what the audience already knows. Mm-hmm. And that's just a re-communication of what the audience just learned 30 seconds ago. Mm-hmm. It's redundant, which is why they removed it to begin with. It wasn't just about not using that.
Right.
Not using that guy who played Jabba. It was just, they didn't need it. It already happened.
Okay.
But there are some changes that I don't, when it goes even into the later films, there's some that are better, like replacing the Emperor the hologram in Empire Strikes Back with Ian McDiarmid. Like, that's a good change.
Was Ian McDiarmid the...
He wasn't. He was cast for Jedi. It was a woman whose name I can't remember.
No, well, that was what I was going to ask. Yeah. He was the Emperor before the prequels, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, yeah. He was only 30, 31
well, it's weird
when he played that part.
It's weird because at the end of the prequels,
mm-hmm.
when he, you know, gets... When he becomes the Emperor proper,
yep.
his Emperor voice... Yes. Sounds weird.
It's a little, it's huskier.
Yeah.
I think, actually, I always kind of assumed that, like, his vocal box was kind of, like, recovering from being massively electrocuted.
Yeah.
Like, by his own force lightning. That's kind of what I always figured. Like,
because
he's, like,
accurate.
He's still healing because right. he doesn't look the same either. He's, like, a lot scabbier,
he's a lot more Play-Doh-y.
Yes, he's a lot Play-Doh-y. That's an excellent way of putting it. Because he's by the time you get him in Jedi, he's rail thin.
Yeah.
So it's like he almost looks more decrepit in Jedi. He's not full bodied anymore. Like
right.
he's old. And like what has happened has really taken its toll. But his voice has recovered a bit.
Yeah.
Although it depends on what scene. Like, when he first steps off the shuttle, he goes, "Rise, my friend." Like, it's still pretty husky. Yeah. But he's also a younger guy playing an older guy. And when he's in the prequels, he's playing his age.
Yep.
So, that's what a time.
And I really liked the celebration that they add at the end of Jedi.
Oh, seeing all the different planets.
Yeah, the different planets celebrating. And I don't care what... I don't care what the fans actually dislike about it. The right call is putting...
Naboo.
No.
Coruscant.
No.
Gungan City.
Hayden Christensen as Anakin's Force Ghost.
Oh, okay. I'm of two minds about this. One, I like it because it connects the films back to the prequels.
Yeah.
Which I think I like the unity. It is one big story. Mm-hmm. What I don't like about it is that when he dies, when Anakin dies, spoiler alert for Star Wars.
when he dies both times.
Both times. You don't know what movie. when he dies, he is... full force good at that older age.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be Sebastian Shaw at that
See.
Point because he is that age and he's whole that way. But I like that it's Hayden Christensen because the last time he was whole and good that way, that's what he looked like.
I feel like it's a very philosophical thing where like when you talk to a child
mm-hmm.
about heaven.
Oh, you're like you become your best self and
like,
stuff like that.
Like, oh mommy, does grandpa grandpa lost a leg.
Mm-hmm.
Does he have two legs in heaven? Yes he does. Because you're made whole again. You're made perfect.
Okay.
That's Anakin.
I get that.
Before his fall.
I get that.
Yep.
I'm fine with that. I mean like technically like the Sebastian Shaw.
Robert Shaw was in Jaws.
Jaws. Yep. I knew it wasn't right.
Krypton. Boom.
Got it. Alderaan. Boom. Got it. Had to make it Star Wars relevant. He is whole again. Like he's not like the burned crisp that he is. You know what I mean? Like you see him with his full hair yep. and like all this stuff. But I get the body made whole, then why doesn't Alec Guinness, why doesn't Obi-Wan look like Ewan McGregor instead of Alec Guinness? Because the Ewan McGregor version of Obi-Wan is him in his prime. Because it's definitely not the Alec Guinness version.
No, but you could argue...
Do you get a choice? Do you flip a coin? Yeah.
I would say, well, here's the thing, is like, he reverts back to Hayden Christensen because that's who he was before Vader.
Right.
That's him at his purest.
Yeah.
Whereas Obi-Wan, that never really happens to. Like, he doesn't lose an arm.
Right.
He doesn't lose a leg. He's always whole.
Is Anakin wearing his glove like his robot hand glove in that scene. I'd be interested to go back to see if he has both regular hands.
I think it's both.
Just if it's like a continuity, like,
yeah,
bluff or whatever.
That's a good question. I've never actually noticed.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason that I think the Sebastian Shaw thing is that, like, I feel bad for that guy. It's like, just cut him out. Like,
well, I mean, all right. So here's the thing. Can you really feel bad about the guy who was
Vader
only
for like
Vader for
minutes.
Like that second, and not the poor guy that wore this uniform or this outfit for three movies and then thinking, I'm finally going to have screen time? And like, nope.
No, it's not going to be you.
Screw you, David Prowse.
Although he wasn't Vader. He was Vader all the time in New Hope, but he wasn't Vader all the time in Empire or Jedi.
Really?
Yeah. So they were different Vaders depending on what they needed them to do. He was still Vader the majority of the time.
Right.
But I think fighting Vader was fighter Vader.
All right, I could see that.
Guy.
The first one.
It's David Prowse.
Well, I was going to say the first one, like you have this fight between David Prowse and Alec Guinness,
mm-hmm.
and Alec Guinness being old couldn't do a lot.
Actually, that's not true. It's the opposite. David Prowse couldn't move in the suit.
So they had to strip it down.
Yeah. Alec Guinness was able to do more than, because if you watch it, he actually like does a couple of like the classic Jedi twirls and like all that stuff. So, I mean, he wasn't going to like do like Phantom Menace style of choreography. But he was capable of more, but it was because Prowse couldn't move in the suit.
Right.
It was too restricting. Even if you go all the way to Rogue One, which is, I mean, it fits in a particular continuity, so I understood why they did it, but like Vader can't raise his hands up to a certain point because his shoulder piece won't let him.
Right.
It stops him from lifting his hand. So, like, if you watch him fight Luke on Cloud City, watch how high he raises the lightsaber. It's not that high because he's like, can't leather and shoulder piece. Stupid Emperor. Why did you? My shoulders are huge already.
Why don't I get a change of outfit?
Why did you give me more shoulders? Because it's a good.
I also
want to
know why.
Look.
Like, I understand he's mostly machine. But I want to understand, like, I don't understand why he doesn't have several different outfits.
I think he just thought
cloaks went with everything.
Cloaks go with everything. He's a Sith Lord. I have a giant.
Handstand.
I have a giant Vader that is sitting behind
now,
me.
I'm trying
to prove a point. Look, I didn't think you'd ever look at Vader's butt, but there it is. Okay, so can you talk for a second while I put this down on the ground?
I could try, but this is very distracting to me.
The cat is very scared right now.
Ah, my enemy is moving from behind the couch. This is my nightmare.
Okay, so I'm going to lift Vader's arms right now so you can see what I'm talking about.
And that's as far as they go.
So see how like this is normal right here. So like the way that he like this toy can. This was a Christmas present, by the way. I didn't buy this myself. It's one of those Target like half size things.
Yeah. I'm actually going to take a picture and put it up on the Twitter.
OK, I'll leave him with his fist in the air. A form. Vader has never, ever done this in any film.
Got it.
Okay. See how it's big like this. But if I lower his arms all the way, see this chest piece right here isn't disconnected. Like on the toy, it's disconnected.
Right.
In real life,
you need points of articulation.
Right, exactly. But in real life, God forbid you be able to move your arms, points of articulation. So he could only lift about halfway in A New Hope. So that's why the fight is kind of dull.
I actually want, you talk about a book where you have points of view from different characters. I want a short story where the Emperor is sitting down with a toy company. It was like, I want to market Darth Vader toys. And they're like, all right, do you want it to be like his, like, and they come up with this toy. And he's like, no, you can't move his arms. You need to split the armor. You need points of articulation. And Vader's just there on the side going, what the hell, man?
I would love that if he, like, even just presented the toy to Vader for Christmas or whatever. And was like, look, he has 88 points of articulation. And Vader's like,
which is like 78 more than you.
I have 8 points of articulation. Four of them are me moving my mouth that can't even see.
I can wiggle my toes.
Well, actually, I really can't because I have robot legs. But
you gave me toes that can wiggle.
For some reason. Oh, my God. So in the episode, in our regular episode, you said Goodbye Girl takes...
Takes
it on Star Wars. So off mic, I had said, like, going to our 90s episode, I had said that...
Off
like,
mic, you tried so hard to make sure that I wasn't just saying that.
Kind of, yeah. Just checking. No, I was going to say, so, like, I gave it to Titanic. Like, we gave the winner Titanic.
Right.
And you say because it's one of the best films ever made.
Yes.
I say because of its cultural significance and technical impact. It's Romeo and Juliet. Because of its cultural impact and the technical achievement mm-hmm. of it, which is the same reason I give it to Star Wars, because in my book, Good Will Hunting is a better movie. It's a better made movie than Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because I think like the story is a little cleaner, dialogue's good, fresh, all the acting is solid, whereas Titanic, there's a couple people I go, yeah, you're good, but you're not great.
But Titanic has the Phantom.
Oh, I do love Billy Zane. He's right there on that shelf. The Phantom, not Billy Zane. But Star Wars is that exact same thing. The acting, like some of it's great, some of it's not so.
Yeah.
Some of it's, you know what I mean? Like it's all.
Some of it's good and some of it's not so great.
Okay, I'll give you good, but I think Peter Cushing and Alec Guinness are great in this movie, particularly to me, Peter Cushing, because he is like I've seen Peter Cushing in a few things, like, and not all Sherlock Holmes things. Like, we watched him in Hamlet, remember? Olivier's Hamlet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's super good in that. He's funny. He's the best part of that movie. apart from Hamlet Sr.
Apart from the credits.
Yeah. Apart from Hamlet Sr., he was the best part of that movie. But, like, so he's a very talented man. And I think, He created a really good character. I think he really thought about what he was doing, the way he walked and spoke, and you know, he wasn't just being generic military guy. There's some kind of, you know, his reason for being.
How he ad-libbed destroying Alderaan. That wasn't even in the script. He was just like, Tarkin would do this.
And George Lucas was like, nope, feels real. Leave it in. Feels fresh. Feels fresh. Do you have anything else that you want to say about Star Wars?
Yeah, I'm thankful that we didn't have Woody Allen writing Star Wars.
I would love to see Woody Allen writing Star Wars.
You say
not like a canon version like that's like episode 10 or episode 11 like Woody Allen or like even a Star Wars story. I actually a Star Wars story like one of their like side movies. I kind of want to see. What does that look like? Just like some random people on some planet having Woody Allen problems while the galaxy is at war with one another.
He'll do the Obi-Wan solo movie or the Boba Fett.
Yeah, that's exactly what I don't want.
Cat is so suspicious of your moving Darth Vader.
My God, he's suspicious of everything.
He's now suspicious of why you're touching him.
He's too busy. I'm sorry. I'll turn Darth Vader on because he says stuff. See what happens. Okay. Well, this has been our Patreon episode. You can look forward to more Patreon episodes as things come and go.
You can look forward to us talking about Star Wars over and over again.
Yeah, I've seen Star Wars 500 times. Well, that's it. You can head over and find us at all things, all places podcasts can be found. You can rate and review us on iTunes and so on and so forth. And
you can go over to Patreon.
You can go to Patreon, which you obviously know because that's how you found this. And you can also find us at Twitter and Gmail at Academy Rewind. That has been our Patreon episode of Academy Rewind. Thank you all for joining us.
Bye.
Bye.